Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. My name is Chris McElyea, your host today. I'm glad you joined me as we're going to look at things going on around us, events that you can benefit from, and we will be continuing our ongoing study of the Old Testament this year, and today we will be moving into the book of 2 Samuel. So stay with us. For the next hour, relax and spend some time in God's Word this morning. Before we begin our study for today, I do want to make you aware of some events that are going on. And one of those begins this Sunday and will run all the way through Friday. And that is a gospel meeting at the Westside Congregation in Idabel, Oklahoma. The speaker is going to be Brother Richard Rutledge from right here on the Gospel Radio Network, and the topic will be Lessons in Lyrics. Also coming up, April the 21st through the 23rd is the 31st Annual Maybank Lectures. This is one of the longer-running lectureships in the Brotherhood, and this is always a great one, and this year's theme is Convicted. And for more information, you can contact the Brethren in Maybank at 903-887-0311. We do also want to remind you that Lads to Leaders conventions are coming up in about a week and a half. That'll be April 14th through the 16th. We will be at of course, they meet at sites all over the country, but we will be in Dallas at the convention there at the Gaylord Texan, and we will have a booth set up there for the Gospel Radio Network, and we hope that you'll come by and see us there at the Lads to Leaders convention. Also coming up April 21st through the 23rd will be the annual Love Lady Lectures. And this year, their theme, I believe for about the fourth year now, is the Lessons in Lyrics. And so you want to make plans to attend that if you can. That is a great lectureship, great speakers, great hospitality. It's just a wonderful time there. Also, ladies, mark your calendars for April 29th. That is the annual Ladies' Day at the Colleyville Church of Christ in Colleyville, Texas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And this year's theme is Hope, the Anchor of the Soul. The speakers are Aaron Sprouse and Denise Sorrell. And they ask you to RSVP at colleyvillechurchofchrist.org. Also, many congregations will be having series this summer and gospel meetings going on. Let us know about those so that we can get the word out for you. Just send us that information to office@tgrn.org. And we will be happy to get your event publicized and on the air with us. I know there's been a great many gospel meetings this week going on. Most of them ended last night. I know that ours was here in Mount Vernon. It was a great, great time with Brother Kerry Clark. And we look forward again to next year's meeting also. Now, as we begin our study this morning, I hope you have your Bible opened and turn to the book of 2 Samuel, as this morning we consider chapters 1 through 4 with the thought of David, the king of Judah. The books of 1 and 2 Samuel are a link from the period of Judges to the transition to the kings of Israel. Samuel would have likely written of the events up to his death, and then the books would have been completed by one or more of the later prophets, likely Nathan and Gad having a part in that. But Samuel was the link from Moses to David, as his work covered the period of the Judges and the inaugurating of first Saul and then David as kings. As we consider chapters 1 through 4 this morning, we could summarize them real quickly in this way. As chapter 1, we see David mourning for Saul and Jonathan. And in chapter 2 this morning, we'll see that David is made the king of Judah. Chapter 3, we look at war against the house of Saul. And in chapter 4, Ishbosheth is slain. So let's begin now with chapter 1, and it begins with the report of Saul's death. Now it came to pass, after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had stayed 2 days in Ziklag. Now the beginning of 2 Samuel is connected with the end of 1 Samuel, as we can plainly see. And verse 2 says that on the third day, this is after the 2 days in Ziklag, behold, it happened that a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dust on his head. So it was, when he came to David, that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself, and said to him, "Where have you come from?" So he said to him, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." So one of Saul's men arrives in David's camp at Ziklag. He arrives showing the obvious signs of mourning, his clothes torn and dust upon his head. And so David inquires of him as to what is going on. He relates his escape from Saul's camp. Verse 4. Then David said to him, "How did the matter go? Please tell me." And he answered, "The people have fled from the battle, and many of the people are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also." So David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and Jonathan his son are dead?" So we see David inquired about the results of the battle, and the young man relays to him the details of the great slaughter. David wanted proof to know for sure that Saul and Jonathan were dead. And we see the response of the young man to David in beginning in verse 6. Then the young man who told him said, "As I happened by chance to be on Mount Gilboa, there was Saul leaning on his spear, and indeed the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. Now when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me. And I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' So I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' He said to me again, 'Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me.' So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm and have brought them here to my Lord." Now, there is some controversy surrounding these verses. Let's go back now to 1 Samuel chapter 31 and pick up in verse 6, and let's look at this for a moment. Verses 4 through 6 of 1 Samuel 31. Then Saul said to his armor-bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me." But the armor-bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor-bearer, and all his men died together that same day. Now, according to these verses, Saul killed himself. The young man here in chapter 1 of 2 Samuel here is apparently not being truthful. Perhaps he is lying, trying to gain the favor of the new leader of Judah. Perhaps he felt that by taking the crown and the bracelet of Saul, he would gain favor with the new King David. His lie that he made to David here was going to come at a great cost. Verse 11. Therefore David took hold of his own clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David began to mourn at the report. David's men of valor did the same. They mourned at the loss of their kinsmen. The young man was certainly not expecting this response from David. He expected to be hailed as a hero, or at least as a symbol of good fortune. But this young man did not understand the character of David. And so David turns to the young man in verse 13. Then David said to the young man who told him, "Where are you from?" And he answered, "I am the son of an alien, an Amalekite." So David said to him, "How was it you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" Then David called one of the young men and said, "Go near and execute him." And he struck him so that he died. So David said to him, "Your blood is on your head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" We might say that the young man would die from the lie. The result he expected was the complete opposite of what he received. As David pointed out, he should have been fearful when he approached King Saul. But he was certainly now fearful of King David. David ordered one of his young warriors to execute the man. Verse 17. Then David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. And he told them to teach the children of Judah the song of the bow. Indeed, it is written in the book of Jasher. David's lamentation to Saul and Jonathan is a beautiful tribute and is evidence of the great grief of David at their death. Now, it is said it was recorded in the book of Jasher, and this book is also mentioned in Joshua chapter 10 and verse 13. This is a book that is somewhere in time been lost, and because of that, it was obviously not essential for man to have an ongoing record of it. For indeed, if If it were essential to man that we have the book of Jasher, God would have seen to its preservation. And as we move to verse 19 in the following verses, listen to the beautiful tribute of David. The beauty of Israel is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. O mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew nor rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For the shield of the mighty is cast away there, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul did not return empty. Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with luxury, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan was slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished. And so now, Saul and Jonathan are gone, and the news has come to David. And as we move into chapter 2, we will find David anointed as the king of Judah. Verse 1. It happened after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up to any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." David said, "Where shall I go up?" And he said, "To Hebron." A wise lesson is found here. David inquired of the Lord as to what his upcoming actions should be, and the Lord instructed him to go to Hebron. So David went up there, and his two wives also. Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. And David brought up the men who were with him, every man with his household. So they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. As the Lord instructed David, he moves to Hebron and sets up residence there along with all of his men and their families as well. Verse 4. Then the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying, "The men of Jabesh-Gilead were the ones who buried Saul." So we find that when men from Judah came to Hebron, there they anointed David as king over Judah. David was also pleased to learn from their report that the men of Jabesh-Gilead had taken the body of Saul and buried it. And David would reward them for their kindness and also strengthen his relationship with those of Jabesh-Gilead. Verse 5. So David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, "You are blessed of the Lord, For you have shown this kindness to your Lord, to Saul, and have buried him. It is a great shame that Saul, for so long, treated David so improperly. When the truth was, there could not have been a more loyal subject in Saul's kingdom than David was. David had more than one opportunity to kill Saul and to take power, but he refused each time to do that because of his honor and his integrity. David was genuinely thankful to the men of Jabesh-Gilead for their actions. Let's go back to 1 Samuel in chapter 31, and let's look at, for a second, verses 11 through 13. And we see more of those men of Jabesh-Gilead. Now, when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night, and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Beth-shan. And they came to Jabesh and burned them there. Then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh, and fasted 7 days. In verse 6, we see David's response to their kindness. And now may the Lord show kindness and truth to you. I also will repay you this kindness, because you have done this thing. David relates to them that the Lord will certainly bless their good deed. Verse 7, now therefore, let your hands be strengthened, and be valiant, for your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. Now though David was now the king of Judah, we see in the following section of Scripture that Abner had other plans for Israel. Verse 8. But Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim, and he made him king over Gilead, over the Asherites, over Jezreel, over Ephraim, over Benjamin, and over all Israel. Abner, the son of Saul, the great military commander, sets up Ishbosheth as king over Israel. Abner did not have the authority to do this any more than I do. He stood opposite the plan of God for Israel. And as the case with anyone who opposed the plan of God, they will eventually meet with failure. Verse 10 says that Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel. And he reigned 2 years. Only the house of Judah followed David. So Ishbosheth came to the throne at the age of 40. Since Saul reigned for 40 years, he would have been born around the time that Saul began his reign over Israel. In verse 11 says that the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. So for 7.5 years, David would reign over Judah from Hebron. And then we see Israel and Judah as brothers go to war against each other. The next section of verses tells us of David's defeat of Abner as kinsmen would draw the sword against each other. Let's pick up in verse 12. Now Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out, and met them by the pool of Gibeon. So they sat down, one on one side of the pool, and the other on the other side of the pool. Then Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and compete before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." So they arose and went over by number, 12 from Benjamin, followers of Ish-bosheth the son of Saul, and 12 from the servants of David. And each one grasped his opponent by the head, and thrust his sword into his opponent's side, so they fell down together. Therefore, that place was called the Field of Sharp Swords, which is in Gibeon. So there was a fierce battle that day, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. So Abner went out against Judah, and for Abner, this would be a great mistake, because the Lord was on the side of the men of David, and because of that, the army of Abner stood no chance. This took place after the foolish competition between some of the foolish younger men. And so we pick up now in verse 18. Now the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab, and Abishai, and Asahel. And Asahel was as fleet of foot as a wild gazelle. So Asahel pursued Abner, and in going he did not turn to the right hand or to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, "Are you Asahel?" And he answered, "I am." And Abner said to him, "Turn aside to your right hand or to your left, and lay hold on one of the young men and take his armor for yourself." But Asahel would not turn aside from following him. So Abner said again to Asahel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I face your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the stomach with the blunt end of the spear, so that the spear came out of his back. And he fell down there and died on the spot. So it was that as many as came to the place where Asahel fell down and died stood still. Joab and Abishai also pursued Abner, and the sun was going down when they came to the hill of Amah, which is before Gia by the road to the wilderness of Gibeon. Asahel was one of three brothers in David's army of the sons of Zeruiah. And Abner, while on the run, recognized Asahel following him because of his great speed. And so Abner yelled out to Asahel to confirm that he was indeed the one pursuing him. Asahel is quite determined to strike Abner dead and take his armor as his plunder. And Abner tells him to attempt to take the armor of someone else so that he would not have to kill him. But he kept following, and Abner thus kills him with his spear when he refused to turn aside and go after someone else. But Joab and Abishai continue their pursuit of Abner. Let's carry on now in verse 25. Now the children of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became a unit, and took their stand on top of a hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the latter end? How long will it be then until you tell the people to return from pursuing their brethren?" And Joab said, "As God lives, unless you had spoken, surely then by morning all the people would have given up pursuing their brethren." So Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still and did not pursue Israel any more, nor did they fight any more. Then Abner and his men went on all that night through the plain, crossed over the Jordan, and went through all Bithron, and came to Mahanaim. So Joab returned from pursuing Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there were missing of David's servants 19 men and Asahel. But the servants of David had struck down of Benjamin and Abner's men 360 men who died. Then they took up Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at daybreak. And so we find the Israelites received reinforcements from the men of Benjamin. And Abner appealed to them, asking how long were they going to continue their pursuit. Joab agreed to the appeal of Abner and ordered the trumpet to be blown to end their pursuit. Then Abner and his men continue on the move. It had been a disaster for Abner and his men, and now they would have to march all night in the aftermath of their defeat. Abner's losses had been significant, while at the same time the men of David suffered very few casualties, and the loss of Asahel being the most significant. And so we find Asahel is buried by Joab's men, and then they travel to Hebron that night. And that carries us now into chapter 3. Chapter 3. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David grew stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker. So the warring continued for a great length of time, and the forces of Abner and Ishbosheth, the king of the house of Saul, grew weaker and weaker as David and his men continued to get stronger and stronger in Judah. It was becoming more and more apparent that David was indeed God's anointed to lead all of the children of Israel, not just Judah alone. And now we see more concerning the family of David. Verse 2. Sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam the Jezreelitess. His second, Chileab, by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. The third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Jeshur. The fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. The fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife Eglah. These were born to David in Hebron. So David's multiple wives bore him six sons while he was dwelling in Hebron. And now we see, as we move on to verse 6, Abner now tries to join forces with David. Now it was so, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner was strengthening his hold on the house of Saul. And Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. So Ish-bosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone in to my father's concubine?" Then Abner became very angry at the words of Ish-bosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I show loyalty to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not delivered you into the hand of David. And you charge me today with a fault concerning this woman? May God do so to Abner and more also, if I do not do for David as the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan to Beersheba." And he could not answer Abner another word because he feared him. It becomes more and more apparent that Abner was intending to eventually overthrow Ish-bosheth and claim the kingdom for himself. By his taking the concubine of Saul, it was indeed a direct challenge to the position of Ish-bosheth. Abner had thoroughly intimidated Ish-bosheth into submission to him. And Abner devises to transfer the throne from Ish-bosheth to David. Let's carry on now in verse 12. Then Abner sent messengers on his behalf to David, saying, "Whose is the land?" Saying also, "Make your covenant with me, and indeed my hand shall be with you, to bring all Israel to you." And David said, "Good, I will make a covenant with you, but one thing I require of you. You shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face." So David sent messengers to Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Give me my wife Michal, whom I betrothed to myself for 100 foreskins of the Philistines." And Ish-bosheth sent and took her from her husband, from Paltiel the son of Laish. Then her husband went along with her to Bahurim, weeping behind her. So Abner said to him, "Go, return," and he returned. So Abner offered a covenant with David, one that would bring him to power over the entire realm of Judah and Israel. And David agrees, but he does it with one condition, that being the return of Michal. The reasons for this have been debated, but remember that Michal had been taken away previously, and he wanted her back. Verse 17. Now Abner had communicated with the elders of Israel, saying, "In time past you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, do it. For the Lord had spoken of David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and the hand of all their enemies.' And Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin. Then Abner also went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron. And David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Then Abner said to David, I will arise and go, and gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. So Abner goes and tells the elders of Israel that the time had come for David to be their king, as they had wanted in times past. And he tells them that God had spoken that David would deliver Israel from the Philistines. And so Abner and David meet. And Abner leaves the meeting with the intention to bring all Israel before David, to present themselves to David as his subjects. But then we see a startling development, as we see that Joab would slay Abner. We pick up in 22, and at that moment, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the troops that were with him had come, they told Joab, saying, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he sent him away, and he is gone in peace. Then Joab came to the king and said, What have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why is it that you sent him away, and he is already gone? Surely you realize that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you, and to know you're going out and you're coming in, and to know all that you were doing. And when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, who brought him back from the well of Sarah, but David did not know it. Now when Abner had returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him privately, and there stabbed him in the stomach, so that he died for the blood of Asahel his brother. Afterward, when David heard it, he said, My kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there never fail to be in the house of Joab one who has a discharge or is a leper, who leans on a staff, or falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai his brother killed Abner, because he had killed their brother Asahel at Gibeon in the battle. So we find that Joab returned from battle to discover that Abner had been to see David, and it greatly angered him. Joab, who was determined to avenge the death of his brother Asahel, which had come at the hand of Abner. King David had sent Abner away in peace after meeting with him, and this greatly angered Joab. And he told David that Abner was there to spy on him. Joab now was making a concerted effort to turn David against Abner. And so as Joab leaves David, he sends men to fetch Abner. And all of this is done without the knowledge or consent of King David. And Joab slays Abner near the gate of Hebron. Joab had completed his vengeful act in slaying Abner. Yes, indeed, Abner had killed his brother, but we must remember that that had been in battle, And on top of that, Abner had given him the opportunity to escape death before he killed him. When David learns the news of Abner, of course, he was greatly upset. And he cursed the house of Joab. And of course, this was a very serious and damaging event. I'd like to read, Brother Burton Kaufman here wrote concerning this moment in time. The terrible curse which David invoked upon the house of Joab finally culminated in Solomon's slaughter of Joab between the horns of the altar. Following Joab's backing of Adonijah to be the successor of David. Among David's last words were those in which he admonished Solomon not to allow the gray hairs of Joab to go down to the grave in peace. The incredible damage to the entire history of Israel, which resulted from this shameless assassination of Abner, could hardly be overestimated. The eventual division of the kingdom in the reign of Rehoboam was due in part to the mistrust and hatred that followed this terribly unjust action of Joab and Abishai. And of course, we'll read of those events in days to come. And so now we see David's mourning for Abner, beginning in verse 31. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, gird yourselves with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." And King David followed the coffin. So they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king sang a lament over Abner and said, "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, nor your feet put into fetters. As a man falls before wicked men, so you fell." Then all the people wept over him again. And when all the people came to persuade David to eat food while it was still day, David took an oath, saying, "God do so to me, and more also if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down." Now all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, since whatever the king did pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's intent to kill Abner the son of Ner. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I am weak today. Though anointed king and these men, the sons of Zuriah, are too harsh for me. The Lord shall repay the evildoer according to his wickedness." What a great tribute when David said that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel. I hope we feel the same way when those great warriors of the cross come to the end of their earthly pilgrimage. David mourned the death of Abner, and the result of this murder was going to mean that even more years were going to pass before the kingdom would be united. And indeed, this was a sad episode in the sad history of Israel. And now we move into chapter 4, verse 1. And now we'll see the murder of Ishbosheth. When Saul's son heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost heart, and all Israel was troubled. Now Saul's son had two men who were captains of troops. The name of one was Baanah, and the name of the other was Rechab, the sons of Ramon the Beerothite, of the children of Benjamin. For Beeroth was also part of Benjamin, because the Beerothites fled to Gittim and have been sojourners there until this day. Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who was lame in his feet. His He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. His name was Mephibosheth. When Ish-bosheth heard of the death of Abner, we are told in verse 1 that he lost heart. This is very similar to what happened when the people of Jericho learned that Joshua and the children of Israel were nearing Jericho. They lost all their confidence and developed a defeated attitude. Though Ish-bosheth was on the throne, the people realized that Abner was the power broker in Israel, and that Ish-bosheth was mostly a puppet leader. Some of the scholars believe that the two military commanders, Benaiah and Rechab, were Gibeonites, and that they were hired mercenaries. Ish-bosheth and Mephibosheth were the only descendants of Saul that could make a claim to the throne. If Ish-bosheth were to die, there would be no one to ascend to the throne, since the only one that could lay claim was Mephibosheth, who was crippled and lame. And so Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan and a mere boy when Saul and his father had been killed. And now we see the slaying of Ish-bosheth. Verse 5. Then the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, Rechab and Baanah, set out and came at about the heat of the day to the house of Ish-bosheth, who was lying on his bed at noon. And they came there all the way into the house, as though to get wheat, and they stabbed him in the stomach. Then Rechab and Baanah, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he was lying on his bed in his bedroom. Then they struck him and killed him, beheaded him, and took his head, and were all night escaping through the plain. And they brought the head of Ish-bosheth to David at Hebron, and said to the king, "Here is the head of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. And the Lord has avenged my lord for the king this day of Saul and his descendants." But David answered Rechab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, and said to them, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all adversity, when someone told me, saying, 'Look, Saul is dead,' thinking to have brought good news, I arrested him and had him executed in Ziklag, the one who thought I would give him a reward for his news. How much more, when wicked men have killed a righteous person in his own house on his bed? Therefore, shall I not require his blood at your hands and remove you from the earth?" So David commanded his young men, and they executed them, cut off their hands and feet, and hanged them by the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ish-bosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner in Hebron. Rechab and Baanah, the two commanders of Ish-bosheth's army, entered his quarters and killed him and beheaded him in the process. They took the head of Ish-bosheth to David, thinking they were doing David a favor. And again, as what had happened before, they had made a terrible mistake. They told David that the Lord was behind this slaying. That was another bad mistake on their part. David recounted to them the events back in chapter 1, and then ordered their executions. David's men cut off their hands and feet and hung them over the pool of Hebron. This was a very public place at that time, and many would see the mutilated corpses. And this would indeed be a strong deterrent to similar behavior in the future. But now the stage is set for David to be made king over the United Kingdom, the northern and southern tribes of Israel and Judah. As we move further into 2 Samuel tomorrow, Chris and JJ will pick up with chapter 5 tomorrow, and the ongoing study of the events surrounding the life of King David. Thank you for joining me this morning. If the Lord wills, I'll see you again next week at this same time for Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network.